My name is Francisco R. Velasquez. I was recruited here actually to be the CEO of PAML and PAML Ventures, because as you know, you may or may not know, but PAML was actually 9 companies and was the 5th or 6th largest diagnostic company in the country. I can't remember the size right now. But when PAML was acquired by LabCorp, which is the largest diagnostic company in the world, actually, they asked me to move to North Carolina and become chief medical officer for their $14 billion enterprise. And I thought about it, but not what I wanted to do. So my wife and I decided that we would stay in Spokane. So I took some time off and started volunteering in the community. And I've been volunteering in the community ever since. Advising a few companies. By the way, I do a lot of those pro bono just because it's fun. But I've been mainly involved in the community in trying to help with education, health sciences, education, arts and culture, as well as access, better outcomes, better access to healthcare through a variety of boards and other organizations.
So tell me the story of how you ended up being the interim health officer for Spokane County.
Oh, absolutely. So I got a call last week. Don't remember the day, but I know it was evening, 7:30, because we were eating dinner. And I had made a delicious brisket, by the way. But anyway, because I'm a really good chef. But I got a call. It was Commissioner French. And I've known Commissioner French for many years, the same way I've known most of our business leaders and higher education leaders, healthcare leaders, and elected officials, mainly because of my activities in the community. Because I've knocked on their doors at some point advocating for either the medical school or university district or the museum or something. So Commissioner French called me and asked me, Frank, how are you doing? And I said, I'm doing well, thank you. And you, which I thought was kind of a weird question, but he then said, well, what are you doing nowadays? And I said, well, I'm still volunteering for the most part in the community, as I've been doing for the last couple of years, as you know, and I've been a little bit more active on kind of like the COVID thing issues with testing, et cetera, at a regional level. And he says, well, I have a hypothetical question for you, basically. I'm like, sure. Says, hypothetical scenario, if we were to need some clinical assistance with some of our clinical programs, will you have the time or will you be interested in helping us? Could you help us? And when he said, could you help us? If you know me, that's kind of like the magic word. I'm probably going to say yes. So I told him, well, Al, I'm sure if I'm the right person and I can help, and that's what I can do for the community, but I'm happy to help. Just let me know. So we left it there. And fast forward to Friday, when actually I showed up here for the first time, and then I found out exactly what I had volunteered for, which is fine. For the interim health officer. So I got to learn a little bit more about what the expectations were and what all of the programs that are ongoing and all the efforts that are ongoing are. So I was, I'm assuming, and I don't know that, I didn't really ask him actually, but I'm assuming that he called me because A, he knows me and probably knows that I will say yes. Two, that he knows I have a long medical background. And three, he probably knew that I'm not really working. I was basically volunteering. Some people say I'm retired, and I hate that word. So let's say I'm volunteering in the community because I've never retired. I don't think I'll ever retire.
So as you've gotten a chance to learn more about what the health officer's job is all about, how does it line up well with your background, and where have you had to do learning this week?
So it's kind of an interesting scenario. You know, my grandmother once told me when I was very little, everything you learn today, you may not have use for it today, but you're going to use it tomorrow. And when I look at my 35 plus year career, a lot of the things that I've done, a lot of places that I've been, and a lot of activities I've been part of actually are very complementary to what I'm doing here now. Doesn't mean that I have all the knowledge, but I certainly have a lot of the knowledge, a lot of the practical experience, and some skills that are very useful now as we try to really manage this pandemic and as well as all the other programs. What do I mean by that? So most people know me as a former CEO of PAML, so they've known me my executive career. more than anything else, because by the time I came to PAML, I was a full-time physician executive, as opposed to a practicing doctor. But that's only been the shortest part of my career. My longest career started more than 35 years ago as a clinical person, and I've taken care of patients. I took care of patients for many years in a variety of health systems, cancer patients, HIV patients. I set up one of the early testing programs for HIV in Boston, and, you know, my job was to counsel patients as well as donors that were positive. I've actually worked with public health agencies at a local, regional, statewide level in multiple states as part of either regional efforts like to set up transplant services or to set up community services or to participate in public health efforts as part of a health system. And I've done that for many, 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 many years. And I also have a full academic career. I'm a professor and former chair. So I know how research, science, and innovation work. I know how technology transfer work. I know how all of those things work that have really helped us now with the pandemic. Because if you think about it, University of Washington, for example, went from genome to test fairly quickly because they have that expertise. And I happen to know exactly how that happens. So it's useful to understand. And then lastly, I went back to school, and because one of my mentors told me you're a natural-born CEO. And I went like, that's wonderful. What should I do? And he says, well, you need to figure out what do you need to learn to become an effective CEO. I said, well, but I want to be a CEO in healthcare. I want to be a CEO of something else. So I made a decision to go back to school. I got a master's in healthcare management at Harvard School of Public Health. And the reason why I did the Harvard School of Public Health is because it's tailor-made for physicians, strong emphasis on public health and policy. You, as a two-year program in both years, you have intensive public policy as well as public health as part of the rest of the stuff that you're learning, because I have to learn the language of the CFOs, etc. But I got so interested in policy that I actually applied to law school, going to law school because I was going to do health policy. But I got a great job offer in Texas to kind of like build a health system, to work with Parkland Health Hospital Systems. So I did that and started to pivot to be more of an executive. And that's actually the shortest part of my career, when I've run three or four companies successfully. Including the company, when I was in Southern California, the manufacturing arm of my company developed the H1N1 test from genome from sequence to market in 90 days, which is similar to what we've seen with COVID, although they've gone a little bit faster because technology is better nowadays than it was, I don't know, 15 years ago. And I've been involved in everything from setting up transplant services for a region to HIV testing to all of these other things. And because of my experience in healthcare, academia, research, working with industry, working with policymakers, and ultimately as an executive, I think those are very complementary skills to the needs for this job. It doesn't mean that it's the only way to do it, but it does mean that I do have complementary skills to help and provide the services at this point in time.
So as you've had a chance a few days to sort of look it over, what are the biggest needs right now in terms of the way Spokane County is dealing with the pandemic?
So I'm going to share with you a couple of my lessons learned over the last couple of days. And the first one I already alluded to, which is I really didn't know the depth of the and breadth of the services here. So I've taken a crash course on what we do. And actually, on my first call, I hadn't even signed on the paperwork, although I had already committed. So technically, I was already nominated, I guess, or accepted by the board. I had to take a call about a communicable disorder, which I haven't heard for in many years. I went, oh, my goodness, this is for real. You know, we did this. But I've learned about the service. That's number one. Number two, I did not realize the size of the team here. We have about 300 people. And more importantly, at least for COVID, which is what everybody's focused now, we do have a large number of people who are deployed in all segments of COVID that have been doing this for months and months and months and months. that have who have a significant level of knowledge and expertise. So I've been learning from them everything that we have been doing because, you know, this is a team sport. Healthcare and public health is a team sport. It's you need lots of people doing lots of things for things to work well. So I think we need to understand that. And part of my goal with this interim position is really to communicate that more to the community, because we have a lot of experts here that have a lot of knowledge I think we could benefit from. Then from the community perspective, as we see more cases, and I think we have anticipated over the last few months that we will see more cases more or less right now for a variety of reasons, one of them being as we move more in the community, well, more people are infected, and we have 40-45% of people that are asymptomatic, so you don't know that you're getting close to someone that is carrying the virus. We knew that numbers would increase. So I think at this point in time, as we look towards the holidays and the colder weather, the most important thing for us in the community is to really go back to the basics of this public health guidelines that we have been providing, which I know sound boring and repetitive, but, you know, facial coverings, hand washing, social distancing, sanitizing, they're now probably more than ever important as we have increased number of cases in the community. And one of the things that I tell people is, you know, think about surgery. There was a time in surgery where surgeons didn't wash their hands. We didn't know it was important. Well, I wasn't born yet, but once we found that hand washing was probably the most significant thing a surgeon could do to prevent post-operative infection, what do surgeons do now? They scrub themselves really, really, really well. I don't think you ever find a surgeon that will even touch the door of the OR without scrubbing. So I think we need to get into, not that we're going to have to scrub ourselves, by the way, but I do think we need to really remember those basic policies of, you know, hygiene and sanitation that are so important. I think that's the best thing we can do right now.
So you've had a chance to look at it from the outside, now from the inside. So how has this agency handled, well, let's say the whole state handled the pandemic? Have you agreed with the more cautious approach that Governor Inslee has led, or would you have moved a little more aggressively?
Well, you know, that's always a question that is hard to answer because we don't know since we can do it differently. But I can tell you that at least based on the data that I have seen, particularly coming out of some of the places where we can have a more controlled approach, like schools, et cetera, it seems that we've been moving at a cadence that makes sense based on the data and the outcomes. You can always argue, could it be faster, could it be slower? Sure. But I think if we continue with the process that we have, which is we have the data, we assimilate that, we distill that into recommendations, we level those recommendations into plans, well laid out plans, we act on those plans, like, you know, bring first graders back to school in a hybrid model and keep them 9 feet away, or et cetera, all these other things that we've been talking to schools. Then you look at the outcomes, okay? So we follow that for 2 weeks, what happened? If it worked, okay, can we repeat that? So I think we need to continue doing that, and we need to continue in a measured approach moving forward, because it's the only way that I think we will get to a place that there's a balance between what we can do versus what we cannot do. And I think having balance, you know, the human beings, we like balance. We like to get to a place where we're balanced. I think we'll be balancing that. Now, the interesting thing is that we've made progress with that balance. You know, 2 months ago, we were not where we're now in terms of things we can do, like, you know, first graders going back to school and other grades. So I think we need to continue doing that. And whether this was better than other places, it's really hard to tell because there's data that supports almost anything out there. Although I have seen most of the data that you look at, if you do have a somewhat measured approach, you seem to have better outcomes. And again, we've seen that, for example, in schools, and that's a national trend. That's not just here. So we know that it works, not just because in Spokane we're being very careful with our kids, but because if we do it that way, it seems to work really well.
So there's a lot of pressure on politicians. Well, I'm sorry, a lot of pressure by politicians to, as your predecessor found out, to open up businesses and to keep the economy going. How would you, you know, if you found that we're going at the right pace, but you're getting more pressure from the Al Frenches of the world, how do you handle that?
Well, I think we, so first and foremost, I'm here wearing my physician, my doctor hat. That's why they asked me. I don't think they asked me because of my executive skills, although those are useful. I think they asked me because I understand the science, I understand the medicine, I understand the public health. So as an interim health officer, my job is to make sure that I bring to the table the medicine, the knowledge, and the science, and we use that, we apply that to make informed decisions that allow us to have plans that are deployable in such a way that we can measure the outcomes. And notice I've said outcomes several times, and the reason for that is because if we take a step, we need to be able to the best of our ability, determine the impact of that step before we add three more. So you have to go on a measure approach. So I've actually compared this to taking care of a very complicated patient, where you actually come in with a therapeutic approach, and that therapeutic approach is based on the best available information today. But then, you know, a week into it, the patient develops an unforeseen either complication or something didn't work. So you stop, you look at the outcomes, and then you realign your therapeutic approach. And if you think about it, this pandemic is like a very complex patient because we've had some surprises with it that we were not anticipating. And it hasn't behaved like other viruses. And it has a very unique characteristic, which is it is not selective in terms of who can catch it, meaning we're all at risk, not just one group of people or one age group or one region. Anybody in the world, as we've seen, can catch it, don't matter who you are, don't matter how old you are, how young you are, or anything else. The only difference is the propensity for complications based on pre-existing conditions. But other than that, you know, from babies to the 106-year-old person that caught it, I can't remember where I read about that, but it was somewhere in the world.
Yeah. So are you at the point right now where you would be okay with more restrictions in terms of, oh, I don't know, maybe going back to school full time virtually or other things that restrict people's movements? Or should we just write it out right now?
Well, I can tell you that by the time I got here, some of the directionally, some of the plans that have been looked at seem to be producing the outcomes that were expected. We have not seen a lot of infections in school from school transmission. And let me make a caveat there. And the caveat is there's a difference between in-school transmission and transmission to someone at the school. It's two different things. Yes. So the more community-based infection that we see, and since we know that 40-45% of the people are totally asymptomatic, the more exposure that potential, you know, teacher aides, and my daughter is a teacher, so I worry about these things all the time, will have to come in contact with someone in the community that is infected and they don't know about it. So we've continued to move forward in the direction that we have. And the conversation that we're having now is very similar to a conversation that happened before me, which is we'll continue doing this with a proviso that if we need to take a pause because the numbers have changed, we'll take a pause and then move forward after that. So I don't think that direction has changed very much. And actually, that was there before I came on board. I just came on board and looked at it and had these conversations. And, you know, based on the data and the outcomes, made perfect sense. So I said, well, let's keep going. We'll go in a very measured step. And I can tell you that the superintendents are being very thoughtful about it. And they're also getting a lot of pressure from, you know, from parents and others, but they're being very thoughtful about how they do this because they want the students, the staff, the faculty, and the families to be safe. And that takes a very measured approach.
I'll just keep you a couple more minutes. I know one of the complaints of the mayor was that the communication wasn't very good between the last health officer and the elected officials. Do you have sort of a strategy for dealing with the whole broad range of stakeholders here? You seem to be a very garrulous gentleman, and I would imagine that you're probably going to talk a lot with those folks who are on the health board and others around the county.
Well, so let me tell you how I typically approach pretty much anything I've ever done, which is I do communicate, I do over-communicate. I've been called a national convener and collaborator, meaning if we need to talk about something, I'm very happy to bring people together. I'm very happy to go and talk to people about, you know, whatever. And you don't know how many calls I've had already in 3 days. I don't even know actually how many I've had. But I'm very happy to have a conversation, because at the end of the day, and this is the way I look at it, you know, we're all trying to do the right thing. We're all trying to do what is best for the community. We may not agree exactly how we do it, but I think if we sit down and we look at the science, we look at the data, we look at the outcomes, these are all very intelligent people that I think with the information will make the right decisions. And my theory in life is that once we all come to a decision, we all, you know, get behind it and move forward and take two steps. And if we need to stop and then take a step to the right or a step to the left, we will do that. And it's not a criticism of anybody. It's just, you know, these plans are not written in stone, because the behavior of the virus in terms of spread continues to amaze us in terms of how quickly it's spreading. So I think my approach, and that's been always my approach, is I reach out, I communicate, we sit down, we talk about it. And if we need to talk about it five times, we'll talk about it five times. It's not a big deal. So I do believe that we need to perhaps communicate more. And I think one thing that we need to do, and this is where you and others in the media can help me, I think it is important for the community to focus right now on maybe paying a little bit more attention to the great job that the agency is doing and all the 300 people here. Because these folks have been working really, 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 really hard. And I think we need to support them as a community. And also taking a step back, taking a deep breath, and knowing that, you know, the virus is here. The virus is going to be around. I don't know for how long, but it seems that it's going to hang around for a while. So the best thing we can do is, although we may not like it, and actually Dr. Lutz and I collaborated on an editorial on facial coverings. And yeah, you know, I don't like wearing face masks. I have mustache and it's really, you know, itchy. But if that's the best thing I can do to protect my family, to protect myself, to protect my friends, my colleagues, you know what? It's a minor inconvenience and I will do it. So I think as a community, we probably need to start focusing on that. And my goal here is to continue moving forward. I have basically three tasks. One is make sure that I provide support and guidance to the employees here, because these are really hardworking people that have a really tough job. Number two, that we continue delivering on all the programs and services that the community deserves and expects and should expect from us. And number three, that we continue pushing forward on the pandemic so we can deliver the best guidance for the community that we can. I keep things simple because I'm not a smart guy. Those are my three guiding principles. I'm going to stick to those because I think that's the right thing to do.